Chapter 20. Hold on one second, Cabrillo said, getting his mind around the situation. He was alone in his cabin. His desk was strewn with paperwork that had gone ignored too long. He hit the intercom button for the communications station in the op center. Yes, Chairman, the night duty supervisor answered at once. What's the status of Max Hanley's radio ID chip? Each member of the corporation had a locator microchip surgically embedded in the leg that beamed a faint signal to the constellation of communications satellites circling the globe. Powered by the nervous system, with an occasional transdermal boost of electricity like with a pacemaker, the devices allowed Juan to know where any member of his team was at all times. I'm not getting a signal. Hold on. Here we go. The computer says his transponder stopped working 11 minutes ago, about 2 miles from the hotel where he was staying with his son. Eddie's is working fine. I show him in central Rome, about a quarter mile from the Colosseum. Thank you. Juan released the intercom and spoke into his desk telephone, a modern instrument disguised to look like a Bakelite phone from the 1930s. Max's transponder's out. I already figured it would be, Eddie replied. That's how they tracked you to Rome, isn't it? Kyle Hanley was chipped when he was in Greece, and they took the precaution of sweeping Max in case we did the same thing. They probably carved it out of his thigh in whatever vehicle they used to make their getaway. But even the best chips can only give you a rough approximation. They aren't as powerful as GPS, Juan said. That's why I think Kyle helped them. When they ambushed us in the hotel's elevator, they brought Max and me back to the suite. Kyle didn't look all that drugged to me. I think he came to during our flight from Crete and was faking it for the last part of our trip. He was left alone for a few minutes in one of the bedrooms while we spoke with Dr. Jenner. Supposedly he was unconscious, but if he was awake, he could have called Kovac or someone else in the movement and given them the name of the hotel and the room number. So Kovac tracked him to Rome using a radio tag, and Kyle guided him to the exact location. That's the only way it makes any sense. Just spitballing here. But what about Jenner? He could have blown our location to the responsivists. He could have, Eddie agreed. But I could tell he hates them the way a drug counselor hates crack. Also, you didn't see the way Kovac pistol whipped him. No. Jenner's definitely on our side on this. Like I said, just throwing it out there. You know, Juan, they took a hell of a risk to get the kid back. Doesn't make any sense if Kyle's just some low-level believer. Then he's somehow involved in whatever they're planning. Or at least exposed to the information at the retreat, Eddie said. They snatched him back to keep operational security absolutely airtight. If they're at this level of paranoia, there's no way they will let Linda into that compound. I already scrubbed her mission. We learned that Kovac was aboard the Golden Dawn and was most likely responsible for those murders. She's going to babysit Kevin Nixon until he can make contact with Donna Sky. Eddie thought about this for a moment before saying, I was with Kovac for only a minute before I escaped, but I could see that. The guy looks like Boris Karloff, with crazier eyes. I just thought of something. Kovac said that Severance gave him explicit orders not to kill Jenner. I don't understand the reasoning behind that. But why would they leave Jenner behind and snatch Max? They don't know if Kyle talked to him during the time he was with us. No, what I mean is, why not simply kill them both? They had the opportunity. And it would have been a lot easier. Same reason. They need to know if Kyle talked. Max is in for a rough time, isn't he? Yeah, Juan said softly. Yeah, he is. What do you want me to do? Eddie said after a lengthy pause, as both men thought about the implications of Cabrillo's answer. Meet the Oregon in Monaco. I'm putting you in charge of the eavesdropping job. You're still going to the Philippines? Eddie was surprised. I have to, Juan replied, resignation in his voice. We need some sort of leverage over Severance if we're going to get Max back. It's going to take the better part of a day just to get you there. God knows how long to find something, even if it exists. Do you really think Max can hold out that long? Juan's next words were as much for his benefit as they were Eddie's. You don't know this because Max never talks about it, but he spent 6 months as a POW during his second tour in Vietnam. The stuff they did to him during his confinement defies belief. He'll hold out. Of that, I am certain. Juan, that was 40 years ago. Max isn't a young man anymore. Surviving torture isn't about your physical strength. It's about how tough you are mentally. Do you think Max has lost any of that? If anything, he's tougher now than he was then. And he knows that we will do whatever it takes to get him back. How did he get out of it? Was he rescued? No. During a forced march to a new location, he and two buddies jumped their guards. They killed 4 VC with their bare hands and vanished into the jungle. Only Max found his way to an American firebase. The other two are still considered MIA. Juan was on the wing bridge of the pilot house just after dawn the next morning to watch the sun reveal the Principality of Monaco and the city of Monte Carlo perched on rocky cliffs over the warm Mediterranean. One of the last functioning monarchies in the world, the tiny state had been ruled by the Grimaldi family for more than 7 centuries. Only Japan's chrysanthemum throne was longer lived. Monaco was long a playground for the world's elite, and its harbor was carpeted with gleaming luxury yachts, many over 100 feet in length, several approaching 300. Juan spotted the Matryoshka, the target of the eavesdropping job on Russian arms merchant Ivan Karikov. High-rise apartment blocks rose all around the harbor, and luxury villas clung to the hillsides. He knew that real estate here was some of the most expensive in the world. From his vantage, he couldn't see the fabled Monte Carlo casino, but he had a few fond memories of the place. From within the inner harbor, he saw a sleek speedboat rocketing toward the ship, where it lay at anchor a mile from the coast. Harbor authorities had already been informed that the ship's engine was disabled and the crew were awaiting parts from Germany. Although the vessel was inside Monaco's 3-mile territorial limit, the harbor master had declined to come aboard after observing the Oregon through binoculars 15 minutes earlier. The speedboat ate the distance to the ship at nearly 60 knots, cutting across the light chop like an offshore racer. Juan descended to the main deck near the ship's boarding ladder. Link was waiting for him with their overnight bags, his eyes hidden behind stylish sunglasses. I don't like leaving right now, the big former SEAL said, and not for the first time. This is the best way we're going to get Max back. I've called Tom Severance's office in California 12 times, all but telling them who I am and what I know, and the bastard won't call back. We've got to force his hand, and to do that, we need leverage. Langston Overholt won't help. Not without evidence. I talked to him for an hour last night. The bottom line is the responsivists have a lot of money, which means they have a lot of clout in Washington. Lang won't act on anything other than solid proof that Severance is up to something. This sucks. Tell me about it. Why don't we bypass the Philippines, go straight to the source, and take on Severance for ourselves? Don't think I haven't thought of that. Lang warned me specifically about not going after Severance. And you and I both know if we get caught operating in the United States, we will never see the outside of a prison again. So we don't get caught. Juan looked at his friend. Link was dead serious. If it comes down to that, I'll put it to the crew. He knew every member of the corporation would risk everything to get Hanley back, even if they knew they would never get another contract from Overholt again, which the cagey CIA veteran had threatened if Thomas Severance or his wife so much as suggested they were under surveillance. The executive water taxi pulled up alongside the ship. As sleek and beautiful as the boat was, it was nothing compared to its driver. A young blonde wearing a blouse that couldn't be cut any lower and a skirt that couldn't be raised any higher. With their chopper still in pieces down in the hangar, the harbor taxi was the fastest way to shore without calling undue attention to the Oregon. "Capitaine Cabrillo, je suis Donatella," she called over the burble of the boat's idling engine. Her accent sent a wolfish grin flashing across Link's face. "Only in Monaco," Juan whispered to Link. "You think some rich guy wants an ugly driver taking him out to his yacht after a night at the casino?" The young woman kept her craft steady by holding the boarding ladder as the two men made their way down with leather duffels over their shoulders. At the end of the 20-foot climb, Juan tossed his bag onto the rear bench seat and stepped over the gunwale. "Thank you," he said. When Link jumped into the boat, it bobbed as if it had been hit by a wave. Donatella gave them both a big smile, her eyes lingering on Link much longer than Cabrillo, as she reached for the chrome throttle controls.
"Chairman, hold up!"
Eric Stone leaned far over the railing overhead to get his attention.
"What is it?"
"I found something."
"Can it wait? They're holding a chopper for us to take us to the airport in Nice."
"Hold on a sec."
Eric climbed over the rail and awkwardly descended the ladder while clutching a laptop computer. He noticed Donatella for the first time when he reached the boat, but barely gave her a first, let alone a second glance. Obviously, he was distracted by whatever news he had. Juan nodded to her, and she eased forward on the throttles. He went aft to let Link chatter up while he pushed aside their luggage so he and Eric could sit. They had to raise their voices over the rush of the wind and the throb of the powerful motor.
"What do you have?" Juan asked.
Eric opened his computer.
"I've been checking for any unusual incidents that may have occurred on ships where the responsivists were holding their sea retreats."
"Did you find anything?"
"Did I?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember recently how there have been reports of viral outbreaks on cruise ships? Usually a gastrointestinal norovirus?"
"Seems there have been a lot more in the past couple of years," Juan remarked.
"It's not a coincidence. At first, I was checking passenger manifests from the cruise companies."
Juan didn't need to ask how Eric obtained such confidential information.
"I cross-referenced those to responsivist membership lists. When I started seeing a pattern, I switched my focus to cruise liners struck by unusual illnesses. That's when I hit pay dirt. Of the 17 outbreaks I've looked into in the past 2 years, 16 of them occurred when responsivists were on board. The 17th wasn't a norovirus and was traced back to E. coli, found on lettuce grown on one specific farm in California. That strain also hit people in Florida, Georgia, and Alabama.
I'll be damned.
It gets worse. Mind you, there's no pattern to cruise lines or ports of call. But there is one definite pattern we could see. During the first incident, only a handful of passengers were sickened, and most of them were elderly. The second one saw 40 people showing symptoms. But by the time we get to the 17th, which happened 2 months ago aboard a ship called Destiny, nearly every passenger and crewman was infected. The cruise line had to chopper in a medical team and a healthy group of officers to get the ship back to port.
Juan leaned back in the soft leather seat, feeling the engine's vibration trying to loosen the knotted muscles in his back. In the cockpit, Link towered over their driver, and he could tell she was delighting in his company. Her laughter carried through the air. He suddenly leaned forward again.
"They're perfecting dispersal methods."
"That's what Mark and I think, too. They got better every time until they achieved a near 100% infection rate."
"How does the Golden Dawn fit into the pattern?"
"Once they worked out how to infect an entire ship full of people, they needed to test the lethality of their toxin."
"On their own people?"
Cabrillo was shocked.
"They could be the ones who developed the agent in the first place. Why take the risk of one of them having a change of heart?"
"Good God! Why?"
The pieces of the puzzle were there before him. He just didn't know how they fit together. What could the responsivists possibly gain by killing people aboard cruise ships? And the answer that kept coming back to him was absolutely nothing.
He could see other terrorist organizations jumping at such a chance, and he considered one of them had paid for such a weapon and delivery system, but the responsivists were flush with money from their Hollywood believers. They espoused population control. Did they think killing 15 or 20,000 retirees who were blowing the children's inheritance on Caribbean cruises would make a difference to the world's overcrowding? If they were that insane, they would go for something much bigger. The puzzle hung tantalizingly close in front of Juan's mind, but he knew it was incomplete. We're missing something. The speedboat slowed as it entered the inner harbor and made its way to a pier next to an elegant restaurant. A waiter was hosing off the wooden jetty in anticipation of a breakfast crowd looking to lessen the effects of their hangovers.
"What are we missing?" Eric asked.
"These whack jobs plan to infect people on cruise ships with a toxin that shows to be 100% fatal."
"It's not 100%. If they released it on the Dawn, Yannicka shouldn't be alive."
"She was breathing supplemental oxygen," Eric reminded him.
"Even with cannulas in her nostrils, she was still inhaling air pumped through the ship's ventilation system."
"Wouldn't matter if it wasn't airborne. It could have been in the water or food. Maybe she didn't eat or drink."
"Come on, Eric, you're smarter than that. They had to hit everyone at the same time or someone would have radioed for help. You can't control when someone takes a sip of water, or eats for that matter, which negates your earlier idea about food poisoning."
Stone looked chagrined.
"Sorry.
You're right. Too much Red Bull and not enough sleep."
"What if the attack on the Golden Dawn was an aberration and not part of their pattern of escalation?"
"What do you mean?"
"I don't know. It's just a thought."
They had achieved nearly 100% on that ship 2 months ago.
The Destiny.
Right.
The Destiny.
There wasn't any reason to hit another ship. They knew they had their system.
So the people on the Dawn were wiped out to keep them quiet?
Juan stood up as Donatella finished tying off the lines.
"I don't know," Juan repeated.
"Listen, we've got a charter jet waiting to take us to Manila. I'll call Langston and pass this along. If he won't go after Severance, at least he can get a warning out to the cruise lines about a potential terrorist threat." Overholt would pass on Cabrillo's information, he was certain, but he doubted much would be done. In the years since 9/11, non-specific threats came in all the time, and like the boy who cried wolf, they were mostly ignored.
"Donatella?"
"Oui, Capitaine."
"Would you mind returning my young friend here back to my ship? Charge it to the account I set up with your boss."
"Of course, sir. It would be my pleasure."
"His too, I'm sure."
Juan turned back to Eric.
"Keep on it, and call me with anything new."
"You got it, boss man." Link and Cabrillo stepped off the boat and onto the dock, lugging their bags.
"What was that she gave you?" Juan asked.
Link pulled a business card from the pocket of his lightweight leather jacket.
"What, this?"
"Her home and cell number."
"With everything going on, you can think about sex?"
"Chairman, I've learned that life is all about reproduction and evolution, and pretty soon she's going to be missing, Link."
"Reproduction and evolution, huh?"
Juan just shook his head.
"You're as bad as Murph and Stoney."
"Big difference, Juan, is I get dates, while those homeboys only fantasize about them."